Welcome to GW Integrative Medicine, the podcast about disease prevention and health promotion from the Office of Integrative Medicine and Health at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences.
I'm Dr. Misha Kogan, Associate Professor of Medicine here at GW and also Medical Director of the GW Center for Integrative Medicine.
And I'm Janet Rodriguez, the office's administrative director. Today, we're talking about cancer survivorship with nurse practitioner Sana Ali, who has over a decade of experience in different aspects of pediatric oncology and radiation oncology.
Sana is currently a PhD student at the GW University School of Nursing with a developing program of research on cancer survivorship. In her role as an NP, Sana saw firsthand the multifaceted complex issues that burden cancer survivors.
Sana decided to pursue her PhD to develop the research skills needed for knowledge generation and scientific discovery that will improve the quality of life and outcomes for cancer survivors. She is presenting her PhD-related work both locally and nationally.
Welcome to GW Integrative Medicine, Sana.
Thank you so much for having me today.
So wonderful to have you here. Of course, we first met in your role working at GW Center for Integrative Medicine while in school. Your life seems to be so full, but let's just start with what started you on your nursing journey?
Sure. So I started my nursing journey quite young. I was in high school. I was 16 years old, trying to decide what I wanted to do for the rest of my life, where I was going to go to college. And I knew I wanted to do something in healthcare, but I wasn't quite sure what that something was. So I had room in my schedule and I took a fundamentals of nursing course at the local college and I just fell in love with it. I loved the complexity of the science, but also the caring aspect of being able to work side by side with patients and families. And so upon that experience, I decided to become a nurse. And that was it. I just knew I wanted to be a nurse. And my journey to oncology was a little bit less intentional. Not only did I know I wanted to be a nurse, I was quite confident I wanted to work with children. So wanting to be at a pediatric hospital and get my foot in the door, I accepted a position as a pediatric child care technician on a hematology oncology unit, not really knowing at the time what that meant. And the rest is history. I just fell in love with the patient population, again, the complexity of oncology, but yet that human side of also being able to be with patients and families in their most vulnerable moments of their lives. And so that's what really started my journey into nursing and into oncology and has influenced where I am today as a PhD student studying cancer survivorship.
Could you define cancer survivorship for our listeners? It's more complex than just making it through treatment, which is an accomplishment enough. But tell us what is cancer survivorship?
Sure. So the National Cancer Institute defines a cancer survivor as the time of diagnosis until the end of life. So cancer survivorship really encompasses that first day that you're diagnosed with cancer until the last day of your life. And so in that sense, there are different phases of survivorship. There's active treatment survivorship, and then there's post-treatment survivorship. So despite that definition of being a cancer survivor from the day of diagnosis until the end of life, my experience with patients is that they don't often see it that way. You know, when a patient's undergoing cancer treatment, if you ask them if they're a cancer survivor, oftentimes they don't agree because they're still going through their treatment. They're still trying to beat the cancer that has burdened their life. And so when people think of cancer survivorship, and that includes patients, they often consider post-treatment cancer survivorship. And that means that the patient has completed their primary active treatment for cancer, and now they're going on to live their life as having a history of cancer. Now, cancer survivorship, as you said, it's quite complex. The National Comprehensive Cancer Network, the NCCN, which are guidelines that we use in the oncology community quite frequently, The guidelines for cancer survivorship care are over 250 pages long. So that tells you that the care that cancer survivors require is complex. It's more than just disease surveillance. It's more than just managing the physical effects of their treatment. It encompasses the psychosocial impacts of cancer, financial toxicity. It includes management of their other chronic illnesses. It is quite common that patients that have cancer also have other diseases as well that require management and monitoring. It also includes health promotion, which is something that I am especially interested in. And this is where patients can really empower, they can feel empowered to change their trajectory of their cancer journey by making lifestyle changes. And that includes physical activity, smoking cessation, diet, nutrition. And so that's also a piece of cancer survivorship. So it really encompasses many facets of a patient's life, and it's quite complex. And so it really requires dedicated focus when you're working with a cancer patient on what we mean by a survivorship visit after a patient has completed treatment.
So I think there's so many facets to this whole conversation. I think that the number of cancer survivors is growing rapidly. I mean, our tools have improved dramatically to cure in multiple cancers. The total amount of cancer occurrences or patients with cancer is gradually increasing for actually not even fully understood reasons. And so, you know, you're getting into this very complex, very broad field. But why did you decide to go into it? And particularly, what drew you to kind of concentrate on the research here?
Yeah. So I'll back up by saying when I worked with pediatric oncology patients, I primarily worked with very sick kids. I mean, these were kids that were getting cancer treatment in the hospital, right? It wasn't an outpatient infusion of chemotherapy. They were inpatient because they were very sick and they were getting high risk treatments. And so my exposure to patients who had completed cancer treatment really didn't begin until I became a nurse practitioner and worked in outpatient radiation oncology, where I got to see patients from that day one diagnosis through their treatment. And then I got to do the follow-up for them as well, when they completed their treatment. So in that role as a nurse practitioner in outpatient radiation oncology and seeing patients in follow-up after they completed active treatment, I started to realize that they had so many issues after their treatment that, yes, we had cured their cancer or they were disease-free at the time, but they were having so many other issues, and they would come to us and say, I can't focus. I'm having so much fatigue. I can't go to work. And that's when I really realized that we didn't really have the tools, at least where I was, to help patients with all these ancillary issues that they were having because of their cancer and their cancer treatment. And when I really started to look into the resources that were available and the literature on some of these topics, I realized how lagging they were for the post-treatment cancer survivor population. And that's really when I decided that I wanted to go back to school, get a PhD, and learn how to conduct research that is needed to help these patients have optimal quality of life and outcomes beyond their cancer treatment.
So, you know, this research here can, of course, go all kinds of directions. I mean, your interest in integrative holistic medicine, and I'm kind of just wondering how would that fits into your future research direction?
Yeah, so the field of nursing is rooted in caring. Mm-hmm. And so when I think about research and cancer survivorship, it fits so nicely in the paradigm of nursing and what we as a profession hold value to, which is the care of patients and families. And on top of that, you know, there are so many gaps and opportunities for research in cancer survivorship. And when I say things like health promotion and psychosocial issues and financial toxicity, this is really getting at the need for holistic care for these patients. And that's really what my interest is, and to conduct research in multiple domains so that we can help patients and families through this very difficult time, but also propel them through to have a life of quality after treatment.
So, Sana, you recently joined GW Center for Integrative Medicine, helping with infusions. And, you know, we have a very complex cancer treatment program, and a number of our patients are cancer survivors. They sort of gotten through the acute phase, and some of them actually have been living after cancer for many years, still doing some of these treatments. Do you see some potential research direction here to kind of try to get more, shed more light on some of these topics, particularly that this more aggressive disease-modifying treatment, integrative treatments of cancer?
Absolutely. I'm perhaps embarrassed to say, prior to joining the Center for Integrative Medicine, my exposure and knowledge of integrative medicine, especially in the realm of oncology, was quite limited. And I say that it's embarrassing only because I've been working in oncology for over 16 years now. So you would think that I would have known more about the topic. But once I was surprised that once I joined CIM, that many of the patients that I see in the clinic are cancer survivors, and they are seeking integrative services for a number of different reasons, whether it's to control their disease or whether it's to help with side effects that they're having from their cancer or their treatments. And so absolutely, there is potential for research on integrative medicine in the world of oncology. And I think it's needed, because I'll tell you, having worked on the other side of traditional treatments for oncology, we very rarely, if not at all, we don't talk about the other possible treatments that patients could consider, even along with their chemo or their radiation. I will say, so I'm currently working on a large data set looking at a national sample of cancer experiences for cancer survivors. And for the first time in 2022, for the first time, the survey has a series of questions on integrative medicine. And that, I think, is really telling about where integrative medicine is heading for the field of oncology and the acceptance of it. Not only among patients, because it seems like patients have been there for quite some time, but also among the oncology community and providers.
Which is all very good to hear.
Yeah, so I plan to, I'm excited to run some analyses on those integrative medicine questions and to see what comes up and what we find, because, again, this is the first year that they've included questions on integrative medicine. And this is an oncology survey. So I think that that's quite telling.
Good news, huh, Misha?
Yeah. Do you know where that's going to get published and when?
Yeah, well, so right now, so it's the National Coalition for Cancer Survivorship. And every year they do a state of survivorship survey. And they actually just completed their 2023 survey. And they've been doing it for 5 years now. So this year, we'll also see additional integrative medicine questions and data. I have not seen it yet, but it's actually rolling out in the next couple of weeks. In terms of where I'm planning to publish such an analysis, well, that I have not, you know, I'm still running the analysis and still have to determine what journal would be appropriate for that, but it's coming. And I think it would be very interesting for other people in the oncology community and integrative medicine community to look at this data set, especially if you have an interest in oncology and integrative medicine, and to see how the two worlds can collide.
Wonderful, wonderful. I think it's such a worthy project. I think one of the biggest things in not just integrative medicine, but definitely in cancer, is a dramatic need for more data, and really to look at pragmatic approaches. Like, what are the patients doing? What are we seeing as outcomes of that? Which particular methods tend to give patients more satisfaction? I think some of this, some of these questions seem to be so basic and simple, and yet we don't have answers to them simply because, well, there's just too many research questions and limited resources and everything. What do you think in the future? Like, where do you think you're going to go? Like, you're going to stay pediatric? What do you think? What's the future holds?
Yeah, so I do enjoy pediatrics, but I would also say I've also enjoyed my time in adult oncology. So I think the first thing is, once I complete my PhD, I'm likely going to pursue a postdoctoral program, a postdoctoral fellowship at an institution, perhaps NIH, National Institute of Health. The National Cancer Institute has several postdoctoral fellowship programs. That's not to mention that NCI has the Office of Cancer Survivorship. And so this is really their focus, is cancer survivorship research, which would be a great opportunity for me if I'm able to do that. On top of that, GW has postdoctoral fellowship programs, and as does the VA has some great opportunities. So likely after I complete my training, I will pursue postdoctoral fellowship so that I could more attune my research skills. And then likely what I would like to do after that is continue my clinical practice. Like I said, I've been working at the bedside of patients since I was 16 years old. So I've always valued and enjoyed the time that I spend with patients and families. And so I do not want to lose my clinical practice as a nurse practitioner working alongside patients. But on top of that, you know, having the support of an academic institution like GW or others, and being able to do the research alongside the clinical practice, what we would consider a nurse scientist researcher, nurse scientist clinician is another way to put it. And so that is my goal for after graduation.
So, Sana, you're in a pretty unique position, actually. So you've worked a lot with pediatric oncology. You worked with adults. There's this one topic, it's kind of close to my heart. One of my friends had a childhood leukemia, and he recovered just fine. But of course, you know, we all know the data, right? Then kids who survive the cancer into adulthood then have all kinds of long-term complications. And I think that's one of the very critically important topics overall in cancer survivorship. How do you see that field moving? Because right now, I'm seeing tremendous amount of struggle of some of the patients who, let's say, get to 30s and 40s. They start having problems, but these are not a typical problems that primary care providers and know how to deal with. And unless the particular center has a specialized cancer survivorship clinic or process of care, often patients' care gets very fragmented and very disjointed. And I've had this particular friend is okay, he's doing really well. But I've been following this topic closely and see how much struggle the systems of care having. Just really curious about, what do you think, what's the best fix that should be here? And what's this field kind of the kids moving into adult survivors going to go to?
Yeah. And I would say that that's not just an issue with kids moving into adult survivors. It's really across the continuum. And actually, pediatric patients, there are more survivorship services for children who have gone through cancer and are moving through adulthood than there are for our adults. But what I would say is, you bring up a very, very good point about the fragmented care for cancer survivors, whether they're children or whether they're adults or whether they're in that transition phase. So in 2006, the then Institute of Medicine came out with a report called From Cancer Patient to Cancer Survivor, Lost in Transition. And in that report, they really highlight the inadequacies of post-treatment survivorship. And that's across the continuum from pediatrics to adults, where patients finish their treatment and then they're kind of dropped. Patients verbalize this feeling of being abandoned, where they don't know who's supposed to take care of them. And in that, this is a major issue for cancer survivorship, and an area of research that I'm interested in is what is the best healthcare delivery model for cancer patients, cancer survivors, after they complete their treatment. If you look at the literature, patients say that they prefer to see their oncologist or their oncology team for their follow-up. And primary care providers are also saying that perhaps they're not quite comfortable taking care of complex cancer patients after they've completed treatment. And so the question is, where are those patients going to go? Where do they fit? Because the oncologist doesn't always have time to address all of their issues. And
well, and also, you know, frankly, I don't think many oncologists have expertise, because that, issue, they're just not your acute oncology problems. They're often quality of life matters that in the long run, it's not actually clear who should be addressing.
Absolutely. And this is one of the major issues that we're facing in the field of cancer survivorship, is who is responsible for the care. Something to keep in mind is there is literature on healthcare delivery models for cancer survivors. There are many that have been tested and have shown promise. And this is one of the areas that I'm interested in, is how do we best care for these patients? And in my opinion, after reading literature and after having worked in oncology for the number of years that I've worked in, is that these patients really need dedicated cancer survivorship teams. They need institution, or they need a center or a clinic that is multidisciplinary, and that their sole focus is on addressing all the cancer survivorship needs that that patient has. And I think it's important to remember that there's not one person that can care for all these issues that a patient's having. It really has to be a team approach, and you need different expertise and different input to address all the issues that patients are having. You know, a nutritionist, a physical therapist, someone that can focus on the financial toxicity piece. I mean, these are different expertise that these patients need. And so I think that we really do need cancer survivorship clinics and centers where that is the focus of the care. You know, the oncologists are focused on treating patients who have new cancer and who are under treatment. And like you said, that number is growing, and that is not going to end. You know, and that's not going to stop. And so we really need people, dedicated professionals to cancer survivorship. If you look at the literature on nurse-led models for cancer survivorship, so in Australia, they've done some studies on nurses that have, and these are registered nurses who kind of lead the care on cancer survivorship and really sitting with patients and families and working with them on the different multifaceted needs that they have and connecting them to the resources that they need. And they're doing quite well. There's high satisfaction, and it's definitely showing promise. And I would argue that, you know, especially as a nurse practitioner, I think there's great potential for nurse practitioners to be able to be involved in cancer survivorship as dedicated providers for those patients, especially when you have nurse practitioners or nurses like myself who have many, many years of oncology experience. And so I think it could bridge that gap between, you know, the primary care who's not quite comfortable and the oncologist who just, quite frankly, doesn't have the time and perhaps, like you said, the expertise. And so can we get some professionals, you know, who are right in the middle, who perhaps know both ends of that, of those fields, and be able to care for these patients, or at least be in the process of coordinating care for them?
You know, it reminds me where palliative care field was about 30 years ago. When the field had started, there was not just a lot of resistance, but there were a lot of eyebrows. It's like, well, we don't need this. We can do all this ourselves. You know, and it took decades to realize that, nope, it's so complicated, it's so specific that you need a special, separate specialty. It wouldn't be surprising to me, and I want your reflection on this, if in 20 years this field will become its own subfield of medicine within, I don't know, primary care or oncology or something.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. Actually, there's a lot of parallels between survivorship, cancer survivorship care, and palliative care. And so part of understanding cancer survivorship is understanding palliative care literature as well. There are some that say that cancer survivorship is palliative care, because in a lot of ways, there's a lot of overlaps. And so I would agree with you that I think in a decade or two, that cancer survivorship will be perhaps a subspecialty in medicine, and rightfully so, because these patients really need dedicated teams and they need specific care to help them live a life of quality and to help them get, you know, the best outcomes that they can.
Wonderful. So I think the other important point here I was going to ask you, you know, so the numbers are growing, the complexity is growing, and you mentioned twice this wording that I've never heard. You said financial toxicity. So am I right that a lot of the situations here, patients left with a tremendous financial burden after cancer? And then, I mean, if I remember correctly, cancer is like one of the top three or something causes of bankruptcy in the United States of America. Tell us about like what happens. So, okay, somebody survived acute cancer, but now they have to deal with all this stuff for a long time. What is the financial burden there? What are there support systems at all in place, or how do the people get their insurances cover all this? Like, where are we with this?
Absolutely. The financial burden for cancer patients is just enormous. And unfortunately, and I can say from experience, you know, if a patient had financial burden after they completed treatment or even during treatment, you know, we're quite limited on how we could help them, which is another reason why I'm so interested on the topic. But I think another important thing to remember, Dr. Kogan, when we talk about financial toxicity, it's not just the cost of the treatments or the drugs or the side effects. It's also the number of patients that are losing their jobs, lost wages because of loss of productivity, patients who are going on disability. This was probably had the greatest effects on me, was having patients with CNS tumors, maybe as children, like you said, as pediatrics, or as young adults, and then coming in their 30s or early 40s, and they just can't work. They can't focus. They've got all these side effects from their treatment and their tumor. And so now they're going on long-term disability. And so that has a huge financial impact on that patient and on their family. So, you know, when you talk about what kind of resources we had for them, we didn't have great resources for them aside from trying to connect them with the few perhaps oncology support groups that could help point them in the right direction. But this is something that, you know, a lot of patients have financial toxicity. And going back to the survey I was telling you about, the National Coalition for Cancer Survivorship and their State of Survivorship survey, you know, financial toxicity and lost wages was one of the greatest concerns of patients. So, you know, there has to be more that we can do. There's still a lot of research that has to be done on this topic, you know, and this is another reason why I am so interested in health promotion and exercise and diet, because this is something that's low cost for patients, but it has the potential to have a profound impact on their life and, you know, whether it helps them continue to work or whether it just improves their quality of life so that they don't have to be on certain medications or treatments for other diseases. And we don't have great cost-effectiveness studies on lifestyle choices in cancer patients and cancer survivors. So this is another need when it comes to research, you know, another gap where there's the potential to learn more about the financial burdens of cancer treatment and post-treatment, but also the benefits of lifestyle modification.
So, Sanaa, is there anything that we haven't asked you that you might want our listeners to know?
So what I would like your listeners to know is that there are people like me and there are other professionals who are really interested in the research and the care that's going to help improve their lives and improve their quality of life for the long run. And so I would say, you know, stay in touch with the resources that are available. I've mentioned the National Coalition for Cancer Survivorship a few times. I think they're an excellent resource, and they have webinars pretty much every month with several guest speakers. They actually had a recent one on financial toxicity. So if anyone is interested in that, you can certainly check out their website and check out that webinar. It was a wonderful talk. And, you know, the National Cancer Institute's Office of Cancer Survivorship also has webinars on topics that are applicable to cancer survivors. And then right here in DC, we have lots of support groups and the cancer support community, and all of these resources are available to you for free to, you know, give you the information and to empower you to learn more about the issues that you and other cancer survivors may be facing, and to help you, you know, be well informed and perhaps help with any of the side effects or issues that you might be having because of your cancer or because of your treatment.
Sounds like going forward, this field will become not just healthcare related. I think it'll become a whole societal, the whole society will have to adjust in a certain way, because we'll have ever increasing number of people living this, and we need to adjust to it. It's not just all integrative medicine or regular medicine. I think there's going to be a lot of other non-medical issues that society is going to have to grapple going forward. So I just want to say how much we honored to you do this interview with you, and that you answering this field. I think it's a very difficult field. People who are going to be entering it are very courageous, because they're going to be struggling. I mean, I think you're going to struggle with so many different problems, particularly because of inefficiency in our healthcare system. And it's so apparent in this particular area, because when the care is so complex, a lot of our systems that just fail patients. And you understanding all of this, seeing it from much more holistic perspective, from nursing perspective, I think this can enrich the whole path forward. So just want to acknowledge how much we appreciate you doing this, and good luck, because you'll need it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
And as a breast cancer survivor myself, I just want you to know how much you're valued and the work that you and others are doing. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Well, that's all the time we have today. Sanaa, thank you so much for joining. Maybe when after you get your PhD and start research, we'll bring you back so you can talk about something a bit more specific. But until then, thank you. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. I'd be honored to come back.
This is the GW Integrative Medicine Podcast from the GW Office of Integrative Medicine and Health.
I'm Dr. Misha Kogan.
And I'm Janet Rodriguez.
Thanks for listening.
The Office of Integrative Medicine and Health produces the GW Integrative Medicine Podcast with funds from your donations. Your generosity allows us to raise awareness of the benefits of integrating whole person care, including evidence-based complementary therapies, into healthcare broadly. Help us continue to grow the podcast by making a tax-deductible donation on our website, smhs.gwu.edu/OIMH. Click the Give Now button on the left. While you're there, sign up for our free monthly newsletter for even more evidence-based content, including free webinars.